Picture this. It's somewhere on the Eastern Front, maybe the summer of 1942, somewhere in the North Caucasus, or along the river line near Stalingrad. A German soldier is on watch in the dark, cold-tired, scanning the sky the way soldiers scan the sky when they know enemy aircraft have been working the area at night. And he hears it, not an engine, not a roar, a whisper, a soft rushing sound moving through the black sky overhead, like silk dragging through the air, like something that has no business being up there. Then the bombs hit by the time the searchlights swing and the anti-aircraft guns are trained skyward. Whatever flew over is already gone, banking back into the darkness. Already vanishing, already headed home to refuel and do it again. The German soldiers call them Nachthexen. The Night Witches, I'm Taildragger. You're listening to The Hangar on Radio Hangar, and tonight we're going deep into one of the most remarkable combat records in the history of military aviation. Not just women in aviation, not just World War II, all of it. Before I get into it, a word from the folks who are keeping this show flying. Today's broadcast is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo, private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. Now, back to the war. By June of 1941, Germany had launched Operation Barbarossa, the largest land invasion in the history of warfare. They hit Soviet airfields in the opening hours and destroyed over 1,000 aircraft before most of them ever left the ground. Entire air armies evaporated in 72 hours. Experienced pilots, trained mechanics, irreplaceable machines, all gone in the first week. The Soviet military was reeling in a way that is hard to fully describe unless you look at the maps from those first months. The front line was moving east at a speed nobody had planned for. Into the situation came a woman named Marina Raskova, and I want to take a minute on her before we talk about the regiment she built, because you cannot understand the Night Witches without understanding who opened the door for them. Raskova was 30 years old in 1941. She had been one of the Soviet Union's most celebrated aviators since 1938, when she served as navigator on a record-breaking long-distance flight called the Rodina, which translates to the motherland, covering over 3,700 miles from Moscow toward the Soviet Far East. The mission was a government-sponsored propaganda showcase designed to demonstrate Soviet technical achievement to the world. The flight almost killed all three crew members. The aircraft ran low on fuel short of its planned airfield to reduce landing weight and give the pilots a better chance of surviving. Marina Raskova bailed out over Siberian taiga with a small amount of food and no real survival gear. She walked out of the wilderness in 10 days alone in October. The Soviet government was not going to let a story like that sit quietly. They gave her the Hero of the Soviet Union. Stalin personally presented it. Pravda ran the photographs. Schoolchildren knew her name. She was by any measure one of the most famous women in the country. When the war started and letters began pouring in from women across the Soviet Union who wanted to fly and fight, Raskova had the standing to do something with those letters. She went to Stalin directly. She wanted all female combat aviation regiments, not ferrying aircraft behind the lines, not working the radios at a command post. Combat aviation regiments in October of 1941. The order was signed. About 400 women were assembled at the airfield near the city of Engels on the Volga River. The volunteers who showed up came from everywhere. School teachers, university students, women who had been flying with the civil sport aviation clubs the Soviet government had encouraged throughout the 1930s. Some were experienced multi-engine pilots. Some were barely past their first solo. They ranged in age from about 17 into their mid-30s. The training regime was brutal. They were compressing what would normally be a year or more of military aviation training into roughly 6 months. Mornings flying, afternoons flying, ground school at night, navigation, meteorology, bombing technique, aircraft systems, they slept when they could get to it. Nobody had planned for women soldiers, so the uniforms came from men's supply stores. Boots were 2 and 3 sizes too large. Flight suits were enormous. They stuffed newspaper and rags into their boot toes to make them fit. They cut their hair short not from regulation, but because the standard issue men's flight helmets did not fit over long hair. Three regiments were organized from those 400 women. Two of them eventually transitioned to more capable aircraft. The 588th Night Bomber Aviation Regiment was assigned to night harassment bombing missions. And for that mission, they were given the Polikarpov PO-2, pull up a chair, because we need to talk about this airplane. The Polikarpov PO-2, in certain production series also called the U-2, had been designed in the late 1920s as a primary trainer, not a military trainer, a basic trainer, wood frame, fabric covering, open cockpit, a radial engine rated at around 100 horsepower depending on the version. top speed loaded with bombs somewhere around 90 miles per hour, stall speed somewhere in the 35 to 40 knot range. Service ceiling on a good day without a bomb load somewhere around 9 or 10,000 feet. It was still in production in 1942 because it was simple enough that factories which had previously built furniture could be converted to manufacture it. It could land on any dirt field smooth enough to set a wagon down on. It was a crop duster. It was a trainer for student pilots getting their first hours. It was not a combat aircraft. The Luftwaffe's night fighter force in that period flew radar-equipped Messerschmitt Bf 110 aircraft and Dornier Du-217 bombers converted to the Hunter role. German searchlight and anti-aircraft coordination around valuable targets was sophisticated and well-practiced. They were good at killing aircraft at night. The night witches were going to fly canvas biplanes through all of that in the dark. What they worked out was not technology, it was tactics, and those tactics were elegant in the way that the best solutions under hard constraints usually are. They flew in pairs. One aircraft would approach the target area at altitude, briefly flash navigation lights to attract searchlights, then maneuver evasively while gun crews tracked it. While that aircraft held the attention of the defenses, the second aircraft approached from a different angle and cut the engine. That's the moment. Throttled back to idle. Propeller windmilling, just the sound of air moving through the rigging wires and the canvas skin. That soft whisper. Like a broomstick sweeping across the sky. That's where the name came from. In that silence, the pilot lined up on the target by memory, by map, by the fires and lights below, released the bombs, then pushed the nose down steeply to gain airspeed, restarted the engine at low altitude where the sound would be swallowed by ground noise, and flew home in the dark. The navigator in the rear cockpit ran the targeting math, the timing, the headings, she called corrections. She read the compass and the stopwatch. She kept the crew oriented over enemy territory with no electronic navigation aids of any kind. Early in the regiment's combat deployment, there were no mechanical bomb release mechanisms. The navigator leaned out of the open cockpit and released the bombs by hand, over a burning target, in the dark. In an aircraft with no armor and no enclosed protection of any kind, they carried no parachutes, not by order, by choice. A parachute for each crew member weighed enough to reduce the bomb load meaningfully. They decided the bombs mattered more. I want you to sit with that. In an aircraft with no armor and no enclosed cockpit and no radar and no radio in the early missions, flying at night over enemy territory, they decided the bombs mattered more than the chutes. The German defenders were frustrated almost to the point of absurdity. The Po-2 was so slow that intercepting it required a Luftwaffe night fighter pilot to throttle back to the edge of his own aircraft's stall margin, in the dark at low altitude, while searching visually for a small fabric aircraft that had no engine noise and no radar return. Worth speaking of, multiple German pilots reported overshooting their quarry entirely because they simply could not fly as slowly as the aircraft they were chasing, without stalling out night fighter pilots. Eventually worked out that the only reliable approach was from below and behind, silhouetting the biplane against the stars. Even that was difficult. The Po-2's low radar signature and low infrared output from its small engine made it nearly invisible to the sensor technology of the period. The German High Command eventually issued a standing order. Any pilot who shot down a Night Witch aircraft would receive the Iron Cross immediately. The regiment began operations in the spring of 1942 in the North Caucasus region and flew almost continuously from that point through the end of the war. The standard was 6 to 8 sorties per crew per night. On good nights with favorable weather and a short approach, the number went higher. The documented record was 18 sorties in a single night by one crew. Think about what 18 sorties in one night means operationally. Each mission, depending on target distance, runs at minimum 40 minutes in each direction, plus time over target. If a full sortie takes around an hour and a half from wheels up to wheels up, 18 of them in an 8-hour night means landing every 25 or 30 minutes at most. The ground crew, working in complete darkness or near darkness, had to rearm the bomb racks, top off the fuel, conduct a quick aircraft check, and clear the crew to launch again in under 10 minutes. Every person on that flight line was also a woman. The ground crews of the 588th were all female. The mechanics, the armorer crews, the fuel handlers, all of them working in the dark, often in winter temperatures that dropped well below zero, getting those canvas biplanes back into the air. Now here's where it gets interesting for me personally. One of the crews that flew those long nights was pilot Nadia Popova and navigator Katya Ryabova. Nadia Popova was 20 years old when she joined the regiment. She had been a civilian sport pilot before the war, the kind of young woman who had taken advantage of the Soviet government's push to make aviation accessible to ordinary people in the 1930s. She arrived at Engels with flying hours in her logbook and a desire to do something useful with them. she flew over 850 combat missions before the war ended. She was shot down twice. The first time, she and Ryabova walked back to Soviet lines. The second time, the aircraft came down inside friendly territory. She kept flying after both of them. In the 1990s, after the Soviet archives were opened, and Western historians finally had access to the records and the survivors, aviation researcher Anne Noggle tracked down Nadia Popova and other members of the regiment and recorded their stories. By that time, most of the women were in their 70s and 80s. Some had been teachers after the war. Some were engineers. Some had largely put the whole thing in a drawer and moved on. Popova was asked what it felt like to approach a target at night with the engine cut. What she was thinking in those silent seconds before the bombs fell. She said she always looked at the stars first. She said she was never not afraid. She said she flew anyway. That's the answer that stays with me. Not the missions, not the decorations. The fact that she was afraid for every one of 850 combat sorties and she climbed back into that open cockpit for every one of them. Fear is not the absence of courage. Every pilot who has ever pushed through weather they were not sure about, or held their heading into turbulence when every instinct said turn back, understands what Nadia Popova was saying. You're afraid, you fly anyway, that's the job. Katya Ryabova, her navigator and one of the most decorated crew members in the regiment, also survived the war. Both women lived long lives. Popova passed in 2013 at 89 years old. Ryabova lived into similar years. 23 members of the regiment did not come home. Most of those losses came from mid-air collisions during night navigation, when two aircraft from the regiment converged on the same landmark in the dark without knowing the other was there. Some losses were to ground fire. A small number were to German night fighters who had worked out the approach geometry. 23 killed in action, out of over 400 women who served with the regiment across 3 years of sustained combat operations. That number tells you something about the tactics they developed and the discipline they maintained. The regiment flew from the North Caucasus north and west through Ukraine, across the Crimea, through Poland, and ultimately to the outskirts of Berlin. When the war ended in May of 1945, the 588th, by then redesignated the 46th Guards Night Bomber Aviation Regiment, the Guards title being the highest combat honor the Soviet military gave to units, had logged more than 23,000 combat sorties. They had dropped close to 3,000 tons of bombs. 23 members of the regiment were named heroes of the Soviet Union. Marina Raskova, the woman who built all of it, did not live to see any of that. She was killed on January 4, 1943, less than a year after her regiment entered combat. Her aircraft went down in a snowstorm over the Volga River during a ferry flight. She was 30 years old. The Soviet government gave her a full state funeral. Her ashes are interred in the Kremlin Wall. There is a crater on Venus named for her. She died before her regiment flew the Crimea, before Ukraine, before Poland, before they reached Germany. But what she built kept flying, long after the war. In the years when the Soviet Union fell and the archives opened, and the old women in their 70s were willing to talk, the full record of what the 588th accomplished came into focus for the wider world. For decades, much of what they did had been classified or simply not discussed in the same breath as male units of similar distinction. Anne Noggle's work in finding the survivors and recording their testimony became one of the essential English language accounts of the regiment. The women she interviewed were modest in the way that people who have actually done extraordinary things often are. They did not describe themselves as legends. They described themselves as pilots who had a job and did it. 18 sorties in a night engine cut over a burning target. No parachutes, no radios. A compass and a stopwatch and a canvas airplane, and another woman in the rear cockpit, calling your headings home. That was the mission. They flew it until the war was over. Tonight's piece drew from Anne Noggle's research records from the Russian State Military Archive, and materials made available after the Soviet archives were opened to historians in the 1990s. More at radiohangar.com. I'm Taildragger, fly well.